Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Good morning. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're going to be here for the next hour to answer your questions on estate planning, estate administration, Medicaid planning. And before the show started, we were talking about stress.
Holidays.
Holiday stress. And Kim was like, we should talk about holiday stress and how to deal with it. And I said, well, I'll let you talk about that.
Oh.
But, well, before we get into that, if you would like to give us a call, the phone number here is 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll free at 1-800-WROW-590. So Kim, tell me about holiday stress.
Well, you know, a lot of times people don't, particularly when you're dealing with older loved ones, we don't realize that there's a whole separate category of activities or things that we should or shouldn't be doing with our loved ones. Because I think a lot of times, I mean, the holidays are stressful for me. And how about you?
I think they are for everyone, yeah.
You know, so when you have someone who's older, maybe they can't hear as well, maybe they have dementia. There are lots of things that we need to take in consideration when we're visiting or when we're, you know, taking them places. So some of the things that we talk about is just keep it simple, because right. It can be very overwhelming for folks as they get older, particularly if they're in even the beginning to moderate stages of dementia, where it's hard year to year. When I get together with my big family, I'm like, now who does that one belong to? And who, you know,
I gave up on that a long time ago.
Right. So just imagine someone who's older and all these people are coming up and hugging them. And, you know, it can be very overwhelming because they have no idea who these people are that are A, touching them, B, you know, and they're having to kind of fake it, right? And that's extremely stressful. They're using up reserves that they would otherwise have to, you know, be able to focus on an activity or
enjoy the day.
Enjoy,
yeah.
Right, the time. A lot of times we'll tell caregivers it's okay to leave your loved one at home. Leave them at home with a caregiver where their day is quiet. You go out and enjoy, particularly if you're leaving and going to someone else's house because you're taking that person out of their environment. So they're in an environment they're not familiar with anymore. So they don't know where the bathroom is. They don't know where, you know, where it's okay for them to be or to sit, those types of things. So you kind of set yourself up sometimes for what we call inappropriate behavior. But it's really not inappropriate at all because this person really has no idea. You've basically taken them to the planet Mars. So those are some really things to consider, I think, when you're working with folks. Mealtime, you want to make sure you keep things as, you know, close to schedule as possible. I know when we get together with a big group of people, sometimes we're not eating at a particular right. time, or sometimes the big meal is later. But for older people, it's really better and healthier for them to eat midday as opposed to late in the day. So those are some things to really think about as well. You know, family dynamics mm-hmm. are always a big, you know, a big issue. And try to keep it short and simple and sweet. And if you are going to have a group of people, just, I would say, really micromanage it into a small period of time. Maybe go visit, say hi, and then kind of leave. Or, again, maybe bring your loved one home with a caregiver, and then maybe you go back for the lingering, you know,
right.
stories, carols, eggnog, you know, whatnot sort of thing. So just some things to consider, I think, when you're dealing with older folks in the holidays, because if it's stressful for us, it's certainly much more stressful for them.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I've had relatives that were in a nursing home, mm-hmm. you know, and you go get them and you bring them to the house, and they want to go back. You know, you think that you're doing this great thing, springing
right.
them from the nursing home, right? Because we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to have all this fun, and they're like, yeah, I have my dinner at 5. And,
right.
and I have to be in bed by 8. So, like,
right.
I want to go back to my home because that's their home. You know, so you really need to temper that. And if you want to take someone, if you do have a friend or a relative that's in a nursing home and you want to take them out for the holidays and stuff like that, you have to realize that they have a set schedule, just kind of like you were talking about. And you could really throw them off by doing stuff like that. And it sounds, we're starting this kind of like a depressing thing, but it's not. I think it's great during the holidays to get together with your loved ones, and it's a great opportunity to be able to talk about things that are going on too. A lot of times you don't realize what's going on with your family. My mom lives all the way in Missouri, and I call her all the time, and you know, she doesn't have any problems, but I do notice when I go home, I usually see her probably every 4 months or so, either she comes up here once a year and then I go home. But I can see, you know, the changes and the problems with, you know, the arthritis kind of setting in and stuff like that. So it's hard, especially if you're out of state when you have your loved ones that are aging.
Well, because you're right. You don't see them every day. So you don't see the changes, right? And so you don't know what their normal schedule is. You don't know. And from a caregiver perspective, too, it's stressful for a primary caregiver to bring somebody along and manage that person all day. So a lot of times we will say to kids or other familiar faces, or bring the caregiver with you. So that if you've hired a professional caregiver, bring that caregiver along with you. So that caregiver can be, that can be the main person that you know, that attachment, if you will, bring some other soothing types of things for that. You know, sometimes we use music as a way to kind of de-stress. So if you have a set of headphones that you can bring for your loved one so that they can sit and listen to music, to allow them to take a break, because particularly when you can't hear very well, and, you know, again, I'll use my family as an example, but when we all get together, it's like 30 people yelling in the room and you can't follow a conversation for anything. So particularly for someone who doesn't have good hearing and has some type of cognitive impairment, you know, they're going to be completely lost as to what's going on. Then you add a barking dog on top of it and, you know, chaos ensues. So
like Christmas Vacation,
right?
The movie. So we'd love for you guys to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900. 1-800-WROW-590 if you're out of the area. And we had seminars this week. We had some interesting questions.
We did.
So, you know, Kim and I did the one in Saratoga. We did the one over at the Holiday Inn. And we had a nice group there. And it was kind of interesting. People can't believe that they can actually get Medicaid to pay for care in their home.
Right.
It was amazing. We're like, no, it's real. And Kim went into the specifics as to what kind of care you can get at home and how many hours you could expect and what kind of situations there are. But people are still like astounded that they could actually, they don't have to put their loved one in a nursing home. They can actually keep them home and have care come into the home. But it does take planning.
Well, planning, I think, is the most important piece. And it's unfortunately the piece that most people are usually missing when they come to see us. And yesterday, actually, we had one of Harry's clients come in, schedule an appointment. And what was so nice and refreshing is they're a little ahead of the curve. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the husband is starting to, you know, mentally he's okay. But physically he's starting to kind of what we call fall into the chair, if you will. Like he's not having hard falls yet, but we know it's coming. And so she's concerned because there are times that she would like to go out, and she says it's hard for him. It's hard for him to in and out, and he would like to stay home, but she's very concerned about leaving him home alone because in the event that that happens. So, you know, the first thing we talked about was having somebody come into the home. But second, you know, a lot of times families don't look at all of the other things that are available. So there's all sorts of assistive technology that can happen. And like I said to her, just a simple, you know, the help I've fallen, I can't get up.
Sort oh, yeah. Of I remember those advertisements,
right.
Yeah.
But now they come with all these great, you know, one comes with a fall detector. So if he does take a fall and knocks himself out, because her answer was, well, he has a cell phone. And I was like, okay, where's the cell? But where's his cell phone normally? In his pocket. Okay, if he falls, is he going to be able to reach into his pocket, grab his cell phone, and then call? What happened if he cracks his head on the corner of something and knocks himself out? He's certainly not going to be able to grab his cell phone then,
right?
And call for help. So I said, by using one of those, you're ensuring that if he does take a fall and you happen to not be at home, at the very least, 911 will be called. And if he's unresponsive, they're gonna send somebody,
right.
And they're gonna contact you at the same time because you're gonna be on that list of people to be called in the event it goes off. You wouldn't have that otherwise. And I said, and if you're going out for 3 or 4 hours, somebody who falls and cracks their head and lays there bleeding on the floor, the chances of recovering and returning home at 87 years old, not so great, you know. But if the emergency responders are deployed quickly, the chances of him being able to be treated and get what he needs very quickly are much better, right? So a lot of times when we do these aging in place seminars, we're talking, you know, about all of the things that are available to kind of help folks. You know, my top two things are safe and sustainable, right? We want to make sure that we keep the environment safe for them, and we want to make sure that because we do have people living well into their 90s and 100s, that when we have somebody come to us at 80, 85, we can plan for the next 15 years. People look at you like, what? But the reality is we might be planning for the next 15 years.
So it made me crack up whenever we had our seminar. She's like, yeah, she goes, you know, I just turned 50 and I'm looking at my house trying to see if I'm going to age in place. How many 50-year-olds do you know that are actually looking around their house saying, geez, let's see, my bedroom is upstairs, my bathroom is upstairs, my laundry is downstairs.
Right.
Am I going to be able to stay in this house?
Yeah. Well, and we don't. And the reason, like I said to our group that we talked to, the reason I'm doing it is because I don't want to be adding on to my house at 70, 75. I'd rather add on now and enjoy it because at 70, 75, I don't want to be taken out a loan to pay. You know, like, I want to be utilizing whatever financial resources we have at that point to hopefully still travel, to hopefully, you know, because at that point, our daughter will be on her, well, on her own.
And you hope anyway.
Well, right. And I'm hoping that at that point, you know, we have the flexibility and the freedom to go do things. And I don't want to be worried about spending what money we have adding an addition to the house. I'd rather do it now and, you know, be able to enjoy that for the next 30 years as opposed to, you know, or being forced to make a move, which happens in a lot of scenarios for people.
So what age do you think people should start looking around their house and try to figure out whether they're going to be able to age in place?
I mean, I think, you know, I think by the time you're 50, you need to start looking ahead at what the next 50 years are going to bring you, right? Because at 50, you're about halfway there.
Theoretically.
Average, right. I mean, not everybody, but you know, there are those people, of course, who are going to, on the younger side of things, develop some kind of chronic illness or something like that, right? So at 50, if you can really start looking and kind of talking about, it's not too late at that point for insurance of some kind if you're healthy. By the time you're 60 or 65, you're really narrowing down the options you have to either, you know, look at long-term care insurance, look at, you know, some other type of avenue to help pay for long-term care. I think 50 is a great age, you know, and you're at that point where you're a little more settled and established, so you kind of have an idea of what financially you're going to be looking at for long-term, hopefully, for your life. So it's a good time, I think, to start planning, you know, and looking ahead.
We always say that people should start planning when they're younger, especially if they have kids, to make sure that if something happens to both of them, that you've got documents in place that say who would be the guardian of your children, who would be the trustee for your kids.
Right.
These are decisions you want to make as opposed to having a court make them. So if you have in your will, you have a trust established for your children, you have the guardianship language in there, and then 20 years later, you need to update your documents to take it out. That's something you should think about. I mean, even if you're young and you just got married and you just had kids, I mean, that's a triggering factor right there. When you buy the house, when you have the kids, that's the time when you really should start thinking about your estate planning documents. You should have your will, your healthcare proxy, and your power of attorney. But people don't want to think about that when they're younger.
Well, I don't want to think about it. And I think at the same time, they think it's an older person's,
right,
you know, need or requirement. And it really isn't. I mean, so often, and time and time again, you tell the story that anybody over the age of 18 should have a right. power of attorney, should have a healthcare proxy. And, well, why is that? Well, because at 18, you're out and about for the most part.
You know,
that's when kids, and they're an adult. So if something happens, you need to have somebody that has access to whatever it is that you need access to. And if you don't have those documents in place, you as a parent can't call and request information because you don't have the proper documentation for an adult, you know.
And that's the problem with the HIPAA laws. There's no access. I mean, even if you're their parent and they're in the hospital and you want to get information, if there's no documents in place, they're not going to tell you.
Right.
Yeah, there's issues with HIPAA. I have a client that came in the other day that her daughter passed away, and her daughter had, she was depressed, and she was, the mother was paying for her to go to a counselor and paying for her meds and everything like that. And her daughter basically wasn't going to the sessions, mm-hmm. and no one could tell the mom, right? Because she wasn't anything for the daughter. She wasn't power of attorney. She wasn't healthcare proxy. She wasn't anything. And then her daughter passed away, and whenever they were cleaning out her room, found out that she wasn't taking her meds either. So what are you going to do?
Well, but it's having those conversations, and the conversations are sometimes hard conversations, but they need to be had. And you know, so often it still amazes me when we do seminars and we have a room full of people who are on average 60 or older, because mm-hmm. that's usually when they start kind of thinking about the aging things. And we ask them who has a power of attorney. Sometimes maybe two or three people raise their hand.
Right.
I mean, so we have an aging population that hasn't even done that. And every day in our office, we deal with scenarios where if somebody had just signed a simple document, it would change everything. Again, when we start talking about a will, mm-hmm. people go, oh, I have a will. Everything's taken care of. They don't realize that, you know, they don't understand the probate process. They don't understand, you know, they just think that the will is going to take care of everything, and that the day after I die, my family just gets whatever is in my will, sort of thing. And in New York State, if you don't have a will, they just think, oh, my spouse is going to get everything. They don't realize that half gets divided between your spouse and your kids, depending on, you know. So if my husband and I at age 50 did not have estate planning documents and he were to pass away, 50% would come to me and 50% would go to our 15-year-old daughter. Like,
woohoo, party at your house.
Right? So, but people don't understand that. They don't understand that that's how it would work if there were no estate planning documents. And the number of people who are in my age group who have done none of that is fascinating to me, because it's very simple to go sit and have a conversation, put things in place. I mean, it's not easy to do, obviously, because you're talking about sensitive things. But once you do it, you're like, oh, I'm taken care of, you know, like I know that things will be okay. But I can't imagine our 15-year-old daughter and, you know, getting 50% of life insurance, of like all of that. Right. Like that would be.
Well, if you guys have beneficiary designations or it's joint, then it wouldn't go to her. But you're right. I mean, we've had a situation. And again, Kim and I could talk all day. We would love for you to guys to give us a call at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or 1-800-WROW-590. I had a situation where Dad and his son came to see me. Mom had passed away. Mom... And we didn't do the estate planning for them. Mom had passed away. The house was in Mom's name, his wife's name. And when his wife passed away, she didn't have a will. So, like you said, 50% goes to Dad, and 50% would be split equally between, he has two kids. He had a son and a daughter. And everybody thinks, well, it's his house. They had just put it in the wife's name for one reason or another. I can't remember what it was. No. There was an evil daughter, and the evil daughter was like, no, I want my money. And the son is like, it's dad's house. It was mom and dad's house. And she's like, I don't care. Based on New York State law, I am entitled to the money. So dad just needs to give me the money. And I mean, it's like, number one, how can you do that to your parent? But number two, that's the law.
Right, right.
So you really don't want to put yourself in that kind of position. I was telling people at the last seminar that we did, I got an email from one of my client's daughters that said that her brother out of state, she forwarded the email to me. He wanted to know if he should open up an account locally in New York, because he's out of state, to put the proceeds, because he's going to get a quarter of the house when mom's house sells. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, did her mom die? So I'm looking, and we did all the research before I called, you know, before I contacted. No, mom's still alive. She's still living in the house. And he's already thinking, well, she's going to die. I'm going to get 25% of, we're going to sell the house. I'm going to get 25%. So I should get an account set up now. So I was just like, you know, I was like freaking out because I was afraid that this lady had passed away. Kind of, I don't know. She's still fine. She's still living in the house. Oh my God. But, you know, I guess he's planning ahead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we hear stories every day, and it's not, and this is what I always, and friends, you know, because I'm in that age group where we talk a lot about this stuff and having teenage kids and, you know, have we made plans for our kids? And, you know, again, kind of dispelling the myths that people have.
Right.
Like, oh, you know, it will all be okay. Well, maybe, but you're right. You don't know if you don't have an evil, dysfunctional family member that's going to try to step in, or you just want to make sure that things are going to go the way you want them to go. So again, you can call us at 518-476-5900 and 1-800-WROW-590. Why do we have 800 numbers still, to be off topic? Is anything long distance anymore? Isn't that
I don't, you know, it would be if you didn't have a cell phone, I would think, right? No?
I don't know.
Ben?
It sounds like a good idea to me. I know we still have a home phone, so.
Well, I know, but like at one point they went like, now you can call nationwide at no charge, right? Like there is no long distance anymore unless you're calling internationally. Or
I don't know. I don't have a home phone. So.
Well, right. So then there's that, right? Most people don't even have. So
we'll get our best people on that to look that up for you.
But I always think it's weird when I see like a 1-800 number. I'm like, are those still like, do we still really need those sort of thing? But
I don't know. I'm sure Ben, will you have the answer next week?
I'll put my best people on it. Yes, right. Of course.
So who's ready for Christmas? Who's bought all their presents and has everything taken care of?
Well, see, mine's perfect, right? So what our family does, my mom requires us to have our list to her by the 1st of November because she does not shop after Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So my sister sends her family list. I send my list. Zach sends his list. And then what I do is I call my mom and we negotiate as to who's going to get what for my sister and her family. So then I go online. I order. This is how perfect it is, right? I go online. I order everything online. I have it shipped to my mother's house. She wraps it. Right? So all I have to do is just show up for Christmas, right? Pretty awesome. Pretty awesome. I know it's not usually. I have to, all the local people I obviously have to buy gifts for, but as far as my family, Amazon is my friend.
Mm. I think we found one of the diva daughters. Right there.
I think you might be right.
Anybody that would have their parent and willingly wrap presents for them, I mean, come on.
Although it could be a meaningful, you know, we always say that the great thing for seniors is to give them meaningful engagement at sort of activities. And that could be meaningful depending. I mean, they feel like they're doing something for somebody and being helpful.
Well, she could leave them, maybe. But my mom.
Are you getting sucked in by her? What's going on here?
Well, my mom, she's very specific about how the presents are and they're under the tree. So it just makes it that much easier, right? Because everything is color coded, right? You know, everything's
like. And she can control everything.
And she can control it, yeah. Yeah. So, but, and she does an excellent job. So.
It's, you know, it's this year for me, and I don't know if it's because, I mean, everybody says, oh, Thanksgiving was so late. Okay, it was a week later, right? Mm-hmm. But this year for me has been a year where I just, from the time Christmas decorations came out in September, which they were out in Lowe's.
Oh, yeah, they were out.
Big blow-up Christmas lawn things. Uh-huh. So it's not for lack of, oh, it just crept up on me because, you know, I mean, stuff has been out for a really long time.
Before Halloween. Yeah.
It just, this year for whatever, like, it's 2 weeks away. Like, not even 2 weeks, less than 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Crazy. It just, time flies when you're having fun.
What about you, Ben? You're all ready to go?
I've done a lot more online shopping this year, but I still have to go into the guts of the stores. And matter of fact, I'm going to knock some stuff off today. So
yeah, I think my mail deliverer does not like us because there are Amazon boxes that arrive daily and multiples. You know, my husband's, he's currently in China, so he orders from there and then I order from here. So like, I don't think she's very happy with us. So, and she has to like get out of the truck, walk upstairs, put them on the porch. It's not a very easy. So I do feel bad. And I probably should try to consolidate everything, but Amazon's kind of bad about sending things in.
Oh, even like if you I'll put get one order
one
together,
item
yeah.
in one box, I might order like 10 things at once, but then I like get a deodorant that's in a box. Like,
well, why do they ship from different vendors, I think, is the deal.
I know.
But I had to crack up. I have Alexa, right? So if you go home and Alexa has this, her light at the top will be yellow, right? So I'll say, Alexa, what notifications do you have for me? And she's like, you have a delivery from Amazon. But during the holidays, I will not tell you what the delivery is. You know, basically because someone could be listening. And I think it's hilarious. But I got home the other night and I said, what are my notifications? And I order medicine for the dog for her joints and stuff like that. So she's like, your shipment of Dosequin is in your mailbox. So I guess she figured the dog, you know, wasn't okay listening.
Yeah. I wasn't on the list of like, don't talk out loud.
I thought maybe she was going to say that because maybe you were getting something you don't know about from L.L. Bean or something like that, where if they say it, then you know what it is.
Yeah.
And that way, if you didn't think you were supposed to get a delivery that day, maybe you should just stay away from it and let somebody else take care of it. So.
My thing is like now that my daughter's older, like it's, and we recently got a horse. And so like, that's what this Christmas is. It's all horse stuff. So nothing is really, and the boxes come and they sit on the porch. So she sees where they're from. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of process of elimination of what's in there. But I'm like, hopefully there are going to be some surprises. Talking about gifts.
We're going to take a break.
Oh, are we?
Okay. So we'll be right back with the second half of the Herzog Law Firm's Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour right after this.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, and Flatbush Road in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, Harry, or Debbie, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office at 518-581-8131. Or our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help you navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And we're back for the second half. This is Debbie Verney.
And I'm Kim Hance.
And we're waiting for our first call. We were just talking during the break, and I was saying, geez, you know, when I'm on with Jane Marie, we usually have a lot of calls, and I guess people are just, like, hanging back, you know?
Yeah. Trying to figure out what's going to happen with the present stuff that you're talking about.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. Presents. So, but yeah. We were all excited. We saw a light flash on the phone. I'm like, look, we have our first caller, and then it just...
Before I could get there, it was gone.
So if you want to give us a call at 518-476-5900, that's 518-476-5900, or toll free, again, we don't know why, 1-800-WROW-590. And Kim, you were saying before the break?
No, I was just saying when we, you know, talking about gifts, one of the big things too, so I run a couple of support groups and obviously, a big part of my job is meeting with families all the time and helping them kind of understand what's out there and what's available. But talking about specific gifts for seniors,
right?
Because as we all know, as we get older, what do we actually need? What do we actually want? What's useful? What's helpful? So I was just going to have this great little list that talks about some of the things that are helpful for seniors and you might want to consider. So one of them, we were talking about technology a little bit earlier, and there are some great technologies that actually help seniors stay at home and provide some services for them. You know, there's pill dispensers. There's like a video doorbell.
I had one of those before, right?
Like the Ring. Mm-hmm. There's Nest. Those are really awesome because you can see even when you're not home. Mm-hmm. You know, you can just open your phone and kind of see what's going on. There's a great thing that's a voice and remote controlled thermostat. I mean, you've talked about, I'm not very technological at all, but Alexa, I think, does that. You can tell Alexa to bump up your, you know, if you get cold.
If everything's all hooked together, yeah.
Right, so all those different kinds of things. You know, there are stove fire prevention devices so that actually if the stove does get catches on fire for any reason, it will automatically suffocate the fire, which is kind of a cool thing. Having somebody come into your parents' house and evaluate it for safety. Like a lot of times seniors won't do that for themselves or they don't even realize that they need to do that. But somebody who can say, oh, a handrail, they'll watch them move through the house. So that person's called an architect barrier or barrier architect.
Okay.
So that person will come in, they'll see how your loved one moves throughout the house, what they typically, what their patterns are throughout the day and may have suggestions on
what
things.
What they bump into.
Right. You know, actually the person that I met with yesterday, her husband had a stroke and so it's affected his whole left field of vision. Mm-hmm. Right. So when he walks through the house, he bumps his walker into everything because he can't see that left side. So one of the things we talked about were how we could rearrange the furniture so to make the path a little clearer for him on that side in particular so that he, you know, wouldn't bump into that. Monitoring systems so that actually loved ones can maybe check in on mm-hmm. your loved one to kind of figure out. Oh, we have a caller.
Good morning. It's Diana in Albany.
Hi. I had a question whether or not you ever heard of the people who are in your will and health proxy and all those legal papers. That they request reimbursement for expenses.
You mean after you pass away or while they're acting for you while you're alive?
While they're acting for you.
So in the power of attorney, the new power of attorney, it does have a spot that says that the person can get reimbursed for expenses. And then there's an additional spot where you can initial it where it says that they get paid for being your power of attorney.
Oh, okay.
So,
I didn't know if that was the case.
So, and as far as after you pass away, in the will, if your will's probated, there's a statutory commission that an executor gets.
Right.
But as far as powers of attorney go, most people don't look for reimbursement. But if you've got somebody that's not a relative, that's not going to take, you know, not going to get anything whenever you pass away, or that lives out of state and has to do a bunch of stuff, has to fly in to take care of things and stuff like that, I've seen them ask for reimbursement for their flights or for travel or for a rental car when they get here. I have seen them ask for reimbursement.
Yeah, because I had that situation and I didn't pick up on it immediately. I just went ahead with the first person that I had planned, you know, but as an alternative, this other person wanted all kinds of money, and I didn't ever hear that before.
Yeah, so, I mean, if that's a situation where you feel like if the person's asking for all kinds of money, that may not be the person that you want to have appointed. It just depends on how much they're having to do. We have a situation right now with one of our people that's on community Medicaid that the power of attorney is basically running the whole show.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
I see.
So it just depends. I mean, if it's someone that's got to, you know, write a couple checks for you or something like that, I don't really see that that's a huge expense to them.
Right. What about when they lose time at work?
Well, when they lose time at work, if your power of attorney says that they can get reimbursed for their time, then they can. It's kind of a gray area. It says reasonable reimbursement. So the question is, how much is your time worth, right?
Right.
So, again, you should look at it. And if this is a person that you feel like kind of is taking advantage of you, maybe you should think about naming somebody else's power of attorney.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. We really appreciate your call.
You're welcome.
Take care. And you can be our second caller at 518-476-5900. That's 518-476-5900 or toll-free 1-800-WROW-590. One of my friends had one of those video surveillance things, but it wasn't for her loved one. It was for her dog.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she used to. She'd be like, and what's my dog doing? And she'd be like, doot-doot-doot. And she'd like show me on the camera, and here's the dog going, hello. I'm just sitting over here by the dog dish waiting for everybody to come home to give me food.
Funny. Well, they now have like Facebook tracks what you look at, which creeps me out a little bit. But I guess there's a new thing right now where you can remotely shoot dog treats out of a little, that's a container, and you can, you know, again, you can look at, it's a video monitor, but it also has dog treats that will dispense. But it actually shoots them through the air. So you see the dog standing there, like waiting to catch the dog treat.
I haven't seen that one yet. That's kind of interesting.
Entertainment while you're away.
So we have Bruce. Good morning, Bruce. Bruce from Saratoga.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay. How long does it typically take for, you know, after a person's death and then the executor who's named in the will gets those privileges to start dealing with the estate? Does it typically take a month, 6 months?
Well, it's interesting. That's a great, great question because it depends. If it's a very nuclear family, so say, for instance, mom and dad are both gone and there's brothers and sisters and whatever. So to probate the will, we would have to have a family tree that shows this is mom, this is dad, these are the kids. Then the kids all have to sign waivers. So once the paperwork, everything's all signed and everything, and it goes to the court, usually it takes a month or less, unless you're up around Ulster County. I know that they've got kind of a backlog right now, but the local areas here, like Albany, Saratoga, Schenectady, usually there's like a month turnaround before the person is appointed. And then once they're appointed, they can collect the assets and do everything. But the estate itself has to stay open with the court for 7 months so that creditors can file claims if there's claims. But they can go ahead and distribute assets. They just have to do a holdback to make sure that there's some money there to pay creditors if they come out of the woodwork.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking that this one is very simple. It's a single man, and his girlfriend was appointed executor, and he has literally no family, and that's it. And it's been months, and she's still waiting to be appointed.
Well, the problem with him being, did he have a will?
Yes, he did.
Okay, so the problem with being a single person, right, is the state of New York looks at the will and they say, okay, do they have a spouse? No. Do they have kids? No. Do they have parents? Are his parents alive?
No.
Okay. No parents. Then they look and they say, are there any brothers and sisters?
There's one brother.
Okay. And was there any predeceased siblings?
No.
Okay. So that brother has to sign a waiver. Because what they do is they look for intestate distributees, anyone that would take if the person didn't have a will. So she may be waiting on him to sign a waiver. And what happens is if he won't sign a waiver that says, yes, you know, she can be executor and everything, then you have to get the court to do a citation, which is a return date for court, which usually puts you out another couple of months. Then if he doesn't show up on the return date, then she's appointed as executor. So if you've got a situation like that, it can push it 3 or 4 months out before somebody ever gets appointed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Because it's been 2 months already, and I'm thinking it was, you know, a very simple situation without a, you know, big family and all that. And the fact that she is named executor, the girlfriend.
Yeah.
I'm thinking, geez, how much more simple can you get? But
yeah, that's the situation with wills. People don't realize that the court has to, you have to verify that there's nobody out there. that would take. And so that's why a lot of people will do trusts, because the trusts don't have to go through the court. Basically, the person passes away. The trustee says, okay, here's yours, we're done. And you don't have to go through the court. It gets difficult, especially if you have people that are single, right, that don't have any kids or a spouse or parents. You've got to start looking through the family until you hit a level, and then that's the level that you have to give notice to. So say, for instance, if he had a sister that had predeceased that had children, we'd have to get a waiver from all those kids too. So it's not as easy as it sounds.
Wow. So that's where a trust is a lot easier to handle.
It is. It's a lot easier to handle because you don't have to notify all these people. It says, you know, the girlfriend's my trustee. Everything goes to the girlfriend. The girlfriend writes herself a check and it's done. Or if there's other people that get money, you know, friends and family, then she writes checks to them and it's done. It doesn't have to go through the courts.
Wow. You think a will is like an end all and be all, you know.
Right.
If you do your will, then everything's taken care of. But it can get very sticky, like you just pointed out.
It does. And you'd be surprised. It's very difficult when you start tracking down families. One time it took us like a year and a half to find all of the family at one level, because the people that were here were first generation, right? So then you're trying to find all the relatives that are back in Italy and who's alive and whatever. And it took us like a year and a half to probate the will to actually get somebody appointed. And then after that, with all the money trying to track people down, there wasn't much left.
Okay. Well, now I have a clearer understanding of this. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bruce.
Bye.
And we have Bonnie from Schenectady. Good morning, Bonnie.
Hi, ladies. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. My folks are, well, my mom is 82. My dad is 85. And they live in their own home. And dad is in pretty good condition. My mom, not so much. And it's been, you know, there's been a continuous decline. And at this point, there's a potential that she may qualify for placement in a facility, long-term care. And as far as my dad, what is he allowed as far as assets? Is he allowed to keep his house? A vehicle, that, you know, basic stuff, what is he allowed to have that would not be tapped in on as far as a facility being paid and that type of thing?
So you're looking for nursing home placement for her?
That's what it's looking like, yeah.
Okay. And what you would think about is trying to apply for Medicaid to pay for her care, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you apply for Medicaid to pay for her care in the facility, there's a 5-year look back, and they look back 5 years at all of your assets, checking, savings, CDs, IRAs, 401ks. You have to furnish 5 years worth of records to make sure that you haven't given any money away. Basically, you could spend it, but not give it away. So when the person goes into the nursing home, the person that's going into the nursing home gets to keep $15,450. Usually it goes up every year, so it'll probably change in January. They're allowed to prepay their funeral, and they're, between the two of them, between mom and dad, they're allowed to keep one car.
Okay.
Now, with dad being at home, dad is allowed to keep the house. We would have to transfer the house just into his name, right? Because mom's only allowed to have $15,450. Dad's allowed to keep the house as long as he's living in it. And he's allowed to keep, and I'm rounding numbers a little bit, he's allowed to keep anywhere between $74,000 and $125,000.
Okay.
And he can prepay his funeral. So the good news, bad news is that retirement accounts, meaning your 401k, your IRA, 403b, those assets don't count as assets. Those are treated as an income source, right? So they would have to even, and you said they're in their 80s, so they're obviously taking their minimum distributions. The minimum distributions plus the income would have to go to pay for mom's care.
Okay. So if the house is transferred into my father's name, mm-hmm. would he, because there are four of us kids, would it count against him if he put one of the kids on that as well?
Yes. Yeah, so the house is an exempt asset as long as it's in his name and he's living in it, right? So he would have to put it in his name individually, and then after mom qualified for Medicaid, right, then we could do some other planning. But to get her qualified for Medicaid, the house is going to have to be just individually in his name.
Okay, I understand. All righty. Well, so, thank you very much. This has been helpful in giving us some direction. It's been a bit of a struggle for a while
it is.
Now.
It's not easy. And, you know, this is stuff that we do every day. So if you want to come in, make an appointment, the consults are free, sit down with one of the attorneys and one of the Medicaid paralegals and just kind of go through and see what the options are. Because even if they're over that 74 to 125, there's always ways that you can preserve the assets. You can, if there's a mortgage on the house, you can pay down the mortgage. You can make changes to the house. You know, do you need a new driveway, new windows, new furniture? There's a lot of ways to spend down that extra money. You can also buy a new car, right? Because it's an exempt asset. So there's a lot of different things that you can do to qualify. Are any of the kids disabled?
No.
Okay. Because there's an exemption for that, too. And nobody's been living with mom and dad, right?
No.
Again, there was another exemption for a caregiver child. So there's lots of different things that you can do to preserve assets. And the thing about the Medicaid application, too, is if they're over-resourced and they apply for Medicaid, they're going to get denied. So you really need to make sure that you're going to qualify before you ever even apply.
Yeah, they've lived very simply, and to my knowledge anyway, there's not a whole lot asset-wise. You know, they had a home in Florida at one point, but that's been sold a long time ago already. So, you know, there's no property. My dad, to my knowledge anyway, doesn't have an IRA or 401k or any of that. You know, when he retired, it was simply just his retirement. So I don't believe there's a whole lot asset-wise.
Sometimes you'd be surprised.
You would be surprised.
Right. And I would be surprised.
Because we've had situations where, you know, they come in and they're like, well, this is what they've got. And they're obviously going to qualify. And we're like, okay, great. So let's start getting statements and stuff. And all of a sudden they're like, well, they had a checking account at this bank. And we're like, okay, so get the statements. And then all of a sudden they get the statement and we're like, yeah, there's two other accounts on this statement. There's a savings account and there's a money market account. And you're like, oh, okay. So, and Medicaid's going to ask for that, so you're going to have to get it anyways. So start doing your research. The easiest way to start tracking things down is with the tax return. Do they file taxes?
My father does, yeah.
Yeah. So taking their last filing of their tax return and looking at the 1099s, where the income came from, you know, if they have accounts here or there. And kind of backing into things. But be very, very careful because, like I said, you can't unring the bell. Once you apply and they deny you, you can't just say, oops, my bad, let's try this again. So be very, very careful. And if there's anything we can do for you, definitely give us a call and come on in.
And your number again, please?
The phone number at the office is 518-465-7581. And Stacy is our scheduler. She's at extension 126.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome. Have a great weekend.
Happy holidays.
Bye-bye.
You know, the other thing that people don't think about is life insurance.
Right.
Because a lot of times we don't realize the cash value that some folks have. And, you know, we're working on one right now who, my goodness, had, 12 life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. And altogether, they added up to be a fairly significant amount. And that cash value was counting against the resource amount that's, you know, it's an available resource for them.
Right.
So we've really had to work diligently to, you know, kind of cash transfer what we can, cash in what we can. You know, it's been kind of a mess. And people don't really understand. They're like, well, that's supposed to go to, there's a beneficiary and that's supposed to go to, you know, so-and-so. I understand, but it's considered a resource. So a lot of times folks don't have cash resources available, but they do have, you know, we're still dealing with a generation that valued life insurance and really purchased life insurance. So That's definitely something that people need to think about and understand.
Yeah, it's an available asset. And we have Janet from Albany. Good morning, Janet.
Yes, good morning. I have a question based on the last caller we were discussing. One of you made a comment that you can transfer the home into the spouse's name if the other spouse is going into a nursing home. But the question I have is, if there's an elderly person and she's got adult children living with her, and she has to go into a nursing home, is she able to transfer the home into one of the adult children's name?
That's an excellent question, and you're going to like the answer. It depends. So, so there is a caregiver child exclusion, okay? So the caregiver child exclusion, whenever a person is going into a nursing home, says, but for that child living there for the last 2 years, that person would have already been in a nursing home. So you are allowed to transfer the house to a caregiver child without having any penalties, right? So if mom, kind of let's just say that mom's a single person, this child's been living with her, taking care of her, and now she has to go into a nursing home, right, then there's a caregiver child exclusion. We could transfer the house to the caregiver, and there's no penalty for the transfer.
Is there any kind of tax implication to the child who now technically owns that home?
Well, they would transfer it to the child, and then if the house was sold, there's a lot of moving pieces, but theoretically, if they transferred it to the child, and the child is going to get the mom's basis, right? Whatever she purchased it for. So if mom purchased the house for $30,000 and then after mom passes, the child sells it for $130,000, they're going to have a $100,000 capital gain that they're going to have to pay taxes on.
Okay. Thank you. And I have one more question if I could.
Sure. Go ahead.
So in that same scenario where the parent is living with adult children and passes away, this is sort of in line with the first caller's question.
We're glad you're listening.
Yes, thank you. It's very good information. So while the estate is being administered, the gentleman was asking about how long it takes. And so is the money in the estate available to continue to pay the expenses of the estate, which would include taxes, you know, the electric bill, heat, etc., while the estate is being administered?
No. So when he was talking about the person hadn't been appointed yet, okay, so let's just kind of make an assumption here. Let's just assume that there's a single person that had a house in their name, they had checking, savings, everything was in their name with no beneficiaries, right? No beneficiaries. There's no access to that money when that person passes away, right? Nobody, even if you're the named executor in the will, until you're appointed, you have no access to any of that money. And I've had this happen before where the person owned a house and they owned all these assets. They pass away. The executor can't get appointed for one reason or another for a while. And there's no money to pay the, like you said, the taxes or the utilities or get the snow plowed out of the driveway. And a lot of times what happens is somebody steps up and says, okay, I'll pay the expenses for the estate right now, but I'm going to get reimbursed once the executor gets appointed, and they'll make an agreement. But if there's assets individually in a person's name with no beneficiary, nobody's going to be able to touch those until somebody's appointed.
What if no one's available to meet those expenses during that period of time?
Then they just don't get paid.
You mean the New York State doesn't get paid for taxes and
correct? If there's no money, there's no money, and okay. If no one steps up, there's no money.
But if there's an identified executor?
Not until they're appointed. It doesn't matter. You're not going to get anything until you're appointed by the court.
Okay. And that's the part that takes about a month?
If everything goes smoothly, yeah. If the people can err, if there's no waivers that are out there forever, if we can distinguish who the relatives are, who the intestate distributees are, yeah. I mean, there's a really good turnaround, usually about a month. And then the person's appointed. But again, it depends if we have a nuclear family, right? Mom, dad, daughter, son, everybody signs off, they get appointed. But when you start going into, you know, this one's kids or this one's brothers and sisters and stuff like that, depending on what level you hit, sometimes it's hard to find all the people that would take if the person didn't have a will, and they all have to have notice before we can probate the will.
Okay.
That's why a lot of people do trusts, right? So mom lives in the house. She's got the caregiver. She's got the children living in the house. She sets up a trust. She puts the house in the trust. She passes away. It goes out to the kids. She goes into a nursing home. The trust continues until she passes away and goes out to the kids. And there's additional cash supposedly in the trust that pays the expenses.
Okay, and so on my original question about the transfer of the home, if the parent's going into a nursing home, there's no look back for that, I'm guessing, correct?
To a caregiver child, there's not, no.
Okay, all right, that's terrific. Thank you very much for your information, Debbie.
You're welcome, and it was great talking to you. And if you have any other questions, you guys can give us a call at the office on Monday.
Terrific, thanks so much.
Have a great weekend.
You too, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, it's like they all waited till the second half hour.
I know. And things get complicated fast, right?
Yeah.
Like as patterns, and that's the one thing like we always say to everybody is like every individual's fact pattern is different.
It is.
So you cannot apply one rule to everyone because generally speaking, there's always something that we can do, or you know, you have to unturn every stone to kind of figure out what we can do.
So it's been great talking to you. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
For listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.